This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's new city manager, Ron Carley, has been on the job for just about 6 weeks and has already submitted a budget for the next fiscal year designed to plan and branding for the controversial streetcar project and has actually read the consultant's report commissioned by the city to study whether or not the airport should remain under city control or be transferred to an airport authority. It is that last topic that we asked Ron Carley to enlighten us on this hour, though I know we'll get into some of those other topics as well. If you read news reports about the outcome of the $150,000 study paid for by the city, you might believe that the aviation industry expert who conducted it actually came down on the side of an authority. But Mr. Carley says if you reached that conclusion, it is probably because you haven't read the actual report. And that intrigued us. So we invited him to join us for the hour. Welcome back. You were just here about a week ago. Nice to have you here again.
It was great to be back with you.
You've already beaten your predecessor's track record of being on the show. So we had this conversation, and we were talking about this report. And I asked you if, because this report was done by a former airline employee at U.S. Airways, and the fact that he had sided with the airport authority, if that was a stumble in some way by city council, and you said, not so fast. Mm-hmm. Where did you get that information? I said, the news. And you said, well, that's because you haven't read the report. So the news media got it wrong?
No, I wouldn't say they got it wrong, but the story was significantly overly simplified. Mm-hmm. And so to be clear, the consultant, Bob Hazel, does recommend airport authority as the best governance approach in terms of leading practices in the industry. Mm-hmm. However, if you read the report, it's a much more nuanced description of the situation and a more nuanced a set of recommendations. Let me just share with you some direct quotes from the report because these are really important. Quote, Charlotte has been a spectacularly successful airport in most regards, including its low cost, high quality service, and prudent financial management. Another quote, Charlotte Airport is the most unlikely candidate, for a change in governance of any of its peers. Another quote, the issues and incidents raised as evidence that the airport needs to be governed by a different structure not only are readily fixable, but the city's interested in fixing them. A couple more. In its current form, the legislation being considered in Raleigh for an authority does not provide best industry practices for a properly structured airport authority, nor for a smooth transition to an airport authority. And finally, he notes, experts regarding airport authority transitions noted that these transitions take time and counseled that the more details worked out in advance, the fewer the problems that will be encountered later on.
So in other words, slow down.
Really?
I don't have all those quotes at my fingertips, but I do have the first one where you say that the report praises the airport for being spectacularly successful in most regards, including its low cost, high service quality, and prudent financial management. Should credit for that go to the city of Charlotte or to Jerry Orr, who's been the airport director forever?
How can you separate those? Jerry Orr is a city employee and always has been a city employee, and the city is a department of the city of Charlotte.
But it's kind of a fiefdom, isn't it? Hasn't he been left alone out there pretty much?
I think.
And I know you're new, so you may not know all the details.
Well, I would hope that all of the department directors in Charlotte are pretty empowered to run their operations. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see the independence and discretion that the aviation director has should be different than the CATS director or the police chief or the fire chief. You hire senior, experienced, competent people to run the part of the city for which they are responsible, but that doesn't mean that they're not part of the city, and it doesn't mean that the city doesn't get some credit for having the wisdom to hire them and give them the independence to actually do their work.
Okay.
And it really begs the question, would a department director, would an executive director of an authority have that same level of independence? You see, one of the issues that's been raised is, you know, about an authority is that you get more separation from political involvement. And what I had this discussion with Bob Hazel, and I said, you know, Bob, one of the things that generality doesn't take into account in many of the city airports that you've looked at is the form of government. Many of the large city airports are actually run under a mayor-council form of government where mayors come in and routinely wipe out all of the senior staff and put in their own team. Charlotte operates under a council-manager form of government. This form of government was created specifically to ensure that there is separation from politics and the administration of the business of government. And so in our form of government, our city council and mayor are the chairman and the board of directors. And they hire the city manager to be the CEO to run the company. Mm-hmm. And I am the political interference. I'm the political barrier between the airport and the police department and the fire department.
And historically, city managers have usually been here for a longer period of time than elected officials. Your predecessor, I'm not sure how long Kurt Walton was in charge, but it was a significant amount of time. But some of the friction that may have led to this impetus to move the airport out of city control and into the hands of an authority may have come from a meeting that Mr. Walton had with, I think, U.S. Airways and somebody else in that meeting talking about this, how the city runs the airport, not the airline.
Okay, so even if you accept that as the case, are we going to let one personality conflict between a couple of people decide to undo everything that's been successful in the city? Let me give you a couple of facts from the consultant's report. I mean, really talking about, well, what matters. Charlotte has the lowest cost among its peers, the lowest cost.
It's dramatic, by the way. I read that part of the report. It's dramatic.
It's dramatic. But you know what? The top five airports with the lowest cost are all city-run and not authorities. Mm. Seven of the top 10 are city-run and not authorities. Charlotte has the highest number of transfer passengers. The whole issue about being a hub, and in order for us to keep Charlotte as successful as it is, we have to maintain a hub. We don't have a large enough population in Charlotte to justify an airport that size. It's only that size because of the transfers. The top three airports with the highest number of transfer passengers are city-operated, and again, seven of the top 10. And so as we're looking at the factors that really matter for Charlotte, and you look at our peers, most of them actually are city-run.
So given all of that information and the fact that that's all in the report and the fact that the report characterized the airport as being spectacularly successful, why isn't that enough to take politics out of the equation, to just shut all of this movement down and just leave it the way it is?
Well, there are two things there. One, I think that it should be enough in order to suspend the current legislation that's under consideration. I mean, the consultant says very specifically it is not leading practices. At the same time, just because we've been spectacularly successful in the past doesn't mean we'll be spectacularly successful in the future. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is actually an important time to step back and say, well, how are we doing? And what are the kinds of things that we should be focused on to ensure the success of the airport in the future? And in that regard, the consultant has identified five areas where authorities are supposed to provide an advantage over city-run operations. And if you'd like, we can go through as many of them as you wish. And I'm prepared to actually analytically go through every single one of them systematically with airport staff, with consultants, looking at leading practices to make sure going forward that the Charlotte Airport is the best airport possible.
Were you in place when the study was done?
When it came out, yes.
Okay. So when the study says that the city is willing to talk about all of this and willing to change.
Those are words from my mouth.
Okay. So they did talk to you about it?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yes. Oh, no, I had a lot of conversations with Bob Hazel, and that's why I'm certainly not trashing his report. I think it's a professional report. I think he really tried to be objective.
What about the criticisms that this guy used to work for U.S. Airways? How could he possibly be objective? What about
I really don't think it's relevant. He's worked many different places. I think he has professional integrity. I do think, and he will say this, that based on his professional experience in the airport industry, mm-hmm. that in most cases an airport authority, in his opinion, is the better governance model. Again, what he did not do in this report, and he will readily admit it, he did not drill down to analyze the specific practices in Charlotte against the best practices in authority airports. In fact, he told the city council, he said, if you're looking for me to give you data that will show you that you will have a better airport under authority than you have under a city, I cannot do that. In fact, he said, it'll be really hard to improve on the performance of the Charlotte airport.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be, because we had Jerry Orr on this program a couple months ago, and there seems to be a great deal of tension between Jerry Orr, who is the airport, and the city of Charlotte. And at one point, Jerry was told not to talk about it by the city because he's a city employee. But he's quite clearly in favor of an airport authority, and he quite clearly has bristled in the past at some interference from the city. So what is the city doing right now to mend relationships with Jerry or with the airport? And can you talk about what you're doing regarding security out there? Because that seems to be a point of contention, the fact that the city police now patrol the airport and not the airport police.
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about both of those. With regard to Jerry Orr, of course, he reports to me and is an at-will employee. I've spent a considerable amount of time with Jerry since I've been here trying to understand what his issues and concerns are. I think we have a productive and professional relationship. It has been interesting. I've had many people advise me to fire Jerry and other people threaten me if I did fire him. I've rarely seen so much political interest in an administrative appointment. But in the end, I'm responsible for the airport. I'm responsible for who is the director of the airport and for that person's performance. And at this point, I think that we are better served by continuing to work with Jerry and taking advantage of his depth of knowledge and expertise.
What is the area of friction? Why is there friction?
I think some of it was personality conflict between Jerry and my predecessor and perhaps with some other people in city administration. We just have to get over that.
He's been there so long and he is 72 that it's become a fiefdom and he doesn't want any meddling anywhere because he knows best?
I would not characterize it in that way. Jerry is at a point where he is obviously looking to retirement. He's talked about that in a number of different venues. And I think probably one of the things that Jerry cares about, as would I, is making sure that what he has built continues and that the airport is strong after he leaves. And I'm committed to working with him to make sure that the airport does continue to operate with the kind of excellence that it has under Jerry Orr.
The airport would be nothing without U.S. Airways, soon to become American Airlines. Are they in the driver's seat?
I think this is a team effort. I don't think anybody's in the driver's seat, really. It takes everyone to really run an airport of this magnitude. And so to say that it's just Jerry Orr, it's just U.S. Airways, or it's just whatever, I just think fails to understand the complexity and the interrelationships that are necessary for a very large operation like an airport of this size to function.
How would you characterize the city's relationship with U.S. Airways?
I think it's exceptional. I met with executives from U.S. Airways before I started. Right after I was named, before I actually came down here, I met with them at Reagan National Airport to get the introduction. And I've talked with people at U.S. Airways. You know, it's hardly an overstatement to say almost daily.
Okay. Ron Carley is the city manager. We're going to go through some of this report that the city commissioned on whether or not the city should maintain control of the airport as we go through the program. And we'll touch on some other topics as well. We have to take a break right now. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Theater Charlotte, presenting Avenue Q, an award-winning musical about Princeton, a recent graduate who moves to New York to discover his purpose in life. Friday through June 2nd, tickets at carolinatix.org. And from historic South End Gallery Crawl, featuring Carolina's Got Art at Elder Gallery through July 27th, details at historicsouthend.com. The Moth is coming to Charlotte. The Moth, of course, is the public radio show you hear on WFAE that's dedicated to the art and craft of storytelling. These stories are told on stage in front of an audience without scripts or notes. It all began back in 1997, and since that time, thousands of stories have been told and broadcast on the radio and sent out as podcasts. And we will meet the Moth's creator and talk about this whole idea of storytelling, which is an old, old art form. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next I Am Dream show, The IRS is accused of unfairly scrutinizing some conservative organizations. Which groups qualify for tax-exempt status and why?
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Ron Carley is our guest. He's the city manager for the city of Charlotte, and we're here to talk about mostly about the study conducted by an independent firm on behalf of the city to shed some light on whether or not the city is the best operator of the airport or whether, in fact, it should go into the hands of an airport authority, which is something that at least the Mecklenburg County delegation to the state legislature would like to see happen. I asked you about—
Actually, I don't know how many would. I don't know if there's ever actually been a vote of the Mecklenburg delegation.
Okay. But there are some forces in the legislature who are trying to who have tried to fast track this, and they have, to their credit, slowed down and did allow the city time to do this.
I would give special recognition to the Speaker of the House. I think he's really looked at this very broadly and intelligently. You know, the one thing I've had conversations with, I think, just about everybody involved with this, including the sponsors of the bills, and consistently, what I find is that nobody wants to mess up the airport. And so, you know, my suggestion is let's don't mess up the airport.
Right.
And let's be really thoughtful in whatever we do, let's do with full analysis and open eyes.
I want to go back to that question I asked about security, because one of the points of contention for whatever reason has been that after that young man fell out of a wheel well on approach to Logan Airport in Boston, which departed from Charlotte, there were serious security concerns because obviously he made it to the actual airplane and got into the wheel well. And so the CMPD took over security at the airport, and Jerry Orr is not happy about that. I think he wants them gone. What's the situation there? Are we going to keep the CMPD out there, or are we going to go back to an airport police?
Right. Well, I think everybody would say that that transition was not smooth and not handled well. Mm-hmm. Not only has the airport director not been happy with the transition, the police chief hasn't been happy with the transition either. And so whatever happened in the past, as far as I'm concerned, is just the past. It's history, precipitating case. I think everything's been said about that needs to be said about it. I don't see any reason to go back and revisit those events and rehash those old acrimony. And so what I've told the airport director and the police chief is we need to move forward. We need to figure out immediately what are the best security operations on a day-to-day basis, and both the airport director and the police chief have designated key members of their staff to sit down and work on those issues together, and they are doing that as we speak.
What changed with the takeover of security by CMPD?
You know, I don't know that I could even tell you what all changes took place other than some of the personnel and the reporting relationships. What I really care about at this point are two things. One, that current operations on a day-to-day basis give us the most secure airport that we can. And secondly, we need to step back and look at what really are the best practices. The police chief told me the very first time I met with him, which is also before I started work here, that he has no particular need to continue to run security at the airport. He was asked to do it. He stepped up, and he's tried to do the best job that he could, recognizing that it has not been smooth on either side. And so the question for me is this: what is the best way to provide security at the airport? And whether it's with CMPD or airport security or contract security or some combination thereof, I think now is the time that we've been in this for 6 months or so, to step back, evaluate it, see how it's worked, look at leading practices at other airports that are our peers, and make decisions about what changes we need to make with no preconceived ideas or notions.
So let's get back to this report, which is why you're here. The report says it conducted a lot of interviews for this report over the course of I don't know how many weeks. And in the course of doing those interviews, they say that we did not detect any suggestion that the airport suffers from the issues or problems that have triggered additional oversight and governance changes at other airports around the country. They found no incidences of patronage, political favoritism, or contracting irregularities. That is why some other airports ended up in the hands of an authority, I think.
That's right. There's a big blow-up and scandal, and people try to, you know, fix it through through a restructuring. That's not the situation here.
And that's none of that's being used as a reason to change control.
No. It appears as though relatively minor personality conflict.
Would an airport authority guarantee that none of those things, patronage, political favoritism, contracting irregularities, would never happen?
Well, clearly not. I mean, the airport authority that runs Reagan National and Dulles International Airports have had outside government reviews and charges of nepotism and inappropriate spending and travel on the part of board members. And especially if your board members are appointed by politicians or they may themselves end up being politicians, you can actually have a more politicized environment on an authority than what you have under the council-manager form of government. And as I mentioned to you previously, I was actually on a special Blue Ribbon committee studying the governance structure for the transit system in Washington. And where it just was not functioning well as an authority, made up primarily of politicians. And what we found is that the people that came under that authority cared more about their interests that they represented than the authority as a whole. And they were micromanaging their general manager to such a degree that their general managers were leaving and they couldn't maintain continuity. If you think you can get micromanagement from a city, You don't even know the kind of micromanagement that you can actually get from a politically appointed board of directors.
The study says that an airport authority, in the abstract, is considered the more effective form of governance because it reduces political involvement in airport management, has a greater ability to function like a corporate board, finances are completely separate from the city, county, or state, and it would have the ability to enter into contracts and procure materials on its own and decide on employee compensation. In other words, they would know best and run the airport accordingly without all the red tape that might come along with city control. However, given the city's track record, why would we expect a change in how the city runs the airport?
So, Mike, those are the five items that I referenced earlier that the consultant identified as the potential benefits from an airport. And so I think we should take advantage of the money that we've invested in this consultant who's identified these areas and actually look at each and every one of them. And so, for instance, let's take the issue of procurement. What is really going on in procurement at the airport today as a city department? Is it nimble? Is it getting the right services at the right cost? What are the leading practices for airport procurement at the best in the field around the country? And if we need to change our procurement practices, let's change our procurement practices. Let's look at the issue of compensation. We already have two different pay plans in the city today. We have a pay plan for general employees, and we have a very different pay plan for public safety. If we need to have a different kind of pay plan in order to compete in the market in a world-class airport the size of ours, let's look at what our current pay plan is. Let's look at best-in-class. And if we need to do a different pay plan, let's do a different pay plan.
And the report goes on to say, quote, to ascertain the reasons given for the interest in changing the governance structure of the Charlotte Airport, more than 40 stakeholders were interviewed in Charlotte and Raleigh between March 22nd and April 4th. All commenters at the hearing expressed the view that the airport should remain under city control governance, primarily because no good reasons had been presented for changing the present system, though one participant did say that to change governance without clear explanation of why a change was needed is itself not good governance. Again, he's making the case for maintaining city control. But they also interviewed stakeholders who believe that an airport authority was the surest way to maintain Charlotte as a low-cost airport. That seems to be diametrically – those comments oppose each other. Why is that?
That's right. And that's why I'm trying to actually integrate them and why I think it's important to look very specifically at the areas where we think an authority could give us a better performance. And let's look at them and make sure that whatever we're doing as a city department, we're doing the best way. Now, if we identify that there is some area in procurement or compensation or some other area that we just can't do as a city department, then let's go to the General Assembly and get legislation to enable us to do it. Or if there's some compelling reason that it really needs to be done by an authority, then let's really talk about, well, what that authority should look like. and what should its authority and scope actually be.
But you are not really in control of what's going to happen next. Nobody is in the city. It's up to the legislature. So what kind of conversations and what kind of feeling are you getting back from the legislature as you express this desire to make changes where necessary to keep control of the airport? What are you hearing back?
Well, the most important thing that we're hearing back is that the speaker has really indicated that he wants this done right. He doesn't want to put the airport in jeopardy, and I think he really would like to have a consensus approach. And I know that's what U.S. Airways wants. The last thing we need at Charlotte Airport is conflict and confusion. And so if we end up with an authority that is done wrong, and we end up with conflict that may be of a legal or managerial or policy nature, then we're going to be tied up in things that we shouldn't be tied up in. We should be focused on how we make this the most competitive hub and the number one place that the new American Airlines wants to have the bulk of its flights. We want to be the number one hub.
And you talk about the problems that may happen if we do this wrong, and the report clearly says that the way the legislation in Raleigh is written that would set up an airport authority is not a good one. It is not a good model. What type of model does this report suggest if we were to adopt an airport authority?
Well, first of all, it says that you really need to do your homework up front, that the more details that are worked out in advance, the smoother the transition will be. And the consultant identifies 7 specific areas: bond transfer, pension transfer, the employment of the staff there, the access to city services, the FAA approval, property transfer and land use. Every one of those areas is highly complex. And before actually transferring to an authority, we should have professional analytical work assessing each one of those areas and identifying how do you do it, what are the steps that need to be done to accomplish it, what would it actually cost, and how long would it take, and actually having a plan that says if you were to do an authority, you really have to do these things. This is what it costs you. This is how long it takes. Is it worth it?
This report criticizes the legislation in terms of the way it sets up an airport authority, saying that it does not make good use of best practices that other airports around the country have proven to be those best practices. But at the same time, it also criticizes the makeup suggested in the legislation of who that airport authority would consist of, who would be on the authority. It does say that Charlotte should have a larger voice than the legislature is recommending, but not the majority voice. Why not?
Yeah, the idea, and I think this is goes back to what the appointing authority is. And so if a majority of an airport authority is appointed by a single entity, and in this case I wouldn't say the city of Charlotte, say the majority was appointed by the mayor or by the city council, that provides, or by the county commission, that would mean with a change in election, then you could have a radical shift in the makeup of an authority. And so their idea is that the major stakeholders would certainly have a plurality, but that you wouldn't enable one single entity to be able to change the whole dynamics on the authority at one time. And, of course, one of the ways you would do that in a Charlotte context, as we have in other commissions and boards, is you have some appointees by the mayor and some appointees by the council. In some cases, some appointees by the commission. And so there are ways, though, that the authority—
What about the legislature? What about South Carolina?
You begin to make the authority more political and more removed from the stakeholders who are most impacted by the airport.
Of course, the city has a lot at stake here, because if we were to lose the U.S. Airways American Airlines hub, the airport would become a ghost town, and it would impact our ability to do international business, and we are the home of many international corporations, either their U.S. headquarters or just major hubs.
Chris, it's not just the city. It's the region and it's the state. And I think that's why wiser heads are beginning to prevail in the General Assembly and saying, let's step back from this and make sure we don't mess up the airport.
So aside from that, the biggest risk would be to say U.S. Airways to have them throw up their hands and say, forget it, we'll move back to Pittsburgh. Aside from that, what are the risks?
Well, that one I don't think we're going to let happen. That's just, you know, that's not acceptable. I think the real risk is that you end up bogged down in conflict in all these technical areas. You know, people say the devil is in the details. The reason they say that is because it really is. And until you actually do the analysis around the details and know what we're really talking about with open eyes, I think every one of the items that the consultant identified creates a risk.
You stress that the city has a commitment to work collaboratively to ensure that Charlotte continues to have the most competitive airport in the region. Is this a new approach? Are you stressing this because the old approach or the old leaders of the city were not perceived to have been willing to be collaborative?
Well, it's hard to paint that picture broadly when you look at the success that the airport has had. But certainly over the past year, it has been a contentious environment, and we need to get beyond that. And everyone I've talked to shares that perspective. We need to find a way to put the baggage behind us and to really look forward and do what gives us really the best airport.
A couple of emails that have come in while we've been talking. Richard emails that Jerry Orr is not the airport. He's in large part the problem. That's too bad, given the many good things he's done for Charlotte. Mr. Carley should drive Jerry Orr past a few local cemeteries and point out all the indispensable men buried there. We'll move on. Dan emails, was this friction evident during Pat McCrory's tenure as mayor, or did it begin during Anthony Fox's term? And maybe you don't know the answer to that question because you weren't here.
I don't, and I'm just not that big of a history guy. I'm more of a futurist. And so I just, at some level, if it's material to moving forward, then, you know, let's talk about it, but let's move forward.
Mohammed emails, if the Charlotte airport is the lowest cost among its peers, and this report clearly demonstrates that it is, why are airline ticket prices among the highest in the country?
It's market driven.
Meaning?
The airport.
Nobody gets on the airplane here?
Then the airports are going to charge what they actually can charge based on their market competition. I mean, it's a supply and demand. And
so you're saying that because U.S. Airways is the big kahuna, they can charge whatever they want because there are not as many alternatives. We can't just pick up and go to United or Virgin Airways or whatever is out there. We can't.
Well, U.S. Airways certainly has competition. They're the biggest airline in Charlotte, but they have competition nationally, and people do have choices, and so – you know, tickets are going to be priced accordingly. Would we like to have cheaper prices here? Yeah. What I'd like to have are cheaper prices where I can do a business trip, go up in one day and come back the same night. And the difference between a single day trip and an overnight trip is stunning.
And I don't understand, since most of the passengers are simply transferring from one jet to the other as they go from one place to another around the country, why is it more expensive for a Charlotte person to get on and get off here? Why wouldn't we benefit from the vast number of flights that are coming in and out here every day? And I have 20 seconds.
Yeah, and I can 20 seconds, I can tell you I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay.
That's really an industry question.
Ron Carley is our guest. He's the new Charlotte City Manager. We've been talking about the airport. We're going to move on to some other things, including the new CityLinks Gold line when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Dermatology, offering comprehensive care since 1939 with 5 locations specializing in skin cancer, Mohs surgery, skin diseases, and cosmetic dermatology. Details at charlottedermatologypa.com. And Carolina Pest Management, serving families and businesses for 4 generations, offering the environmentally responsible Centricon system as part of a 6-point protection plan. Details at carolinapest.com. The Internal Revenue Service is accused of unfairly scrutinizing some conservative organizations, understanding which groups qualify for tax-exempt status and why, the topic of the conversation at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can do so at 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at wfae.org/charlottetalks. We're coming right back.
Steve, what do you mean when you say we need to slow down the news?
What I mean is the world is moving so quickly and we're all racing to get the story first. But the world is so complicated, you need to go back to a story. You need to look at it again and again to get a fuller sense of reality. And that's what we do morning after morning on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, your source for the latest news weekdays from 5 till 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and in our Spirit Square studio, City Manager Ron Carley. We've been talking about the airport and the airport authority and the report that came out about the airport authority. And if you have anything else you'd like to say about that, feel free to do so. And if you have any questions about it, feel free to join us, although we are going to move on to some other topics. 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, or email, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. On to the streetcar. The streetcar has been a bone of contention. It's a big pet project of Anthony Fox, who hopes soon to become the next Secretary of Transportation in the Obama administration. But you took the streetcar out of the city's capital improvement project so that the capital improvement project wouldn't get bogged down politically in streetcar financing details. And on Monday night, you took it a step further. You unveiled new branding for the streetcar. It's now called CityLink's Gold Line, and new suggestions on how to finance all this. Would the city still be running the streetcar, or are you turning the streetcar over to CATS?
Yeah, the details of operations we've not actually worked through. We're really talking more about how do we pull together the funding to advance the project. Those details would come subsequently. I will say, though, that pulling the streetcar out from the airport, all transportation all the time.
That's right.
Pulling it out of the capital improvement program was not really for political expediency. It was a more practical issue. I literally had not had sufficient time to review the streetcar proposal in detail. I knew that what was on the table from last year didn't work, and if the streetcar was going to go forward, then it needed to have a different plan. And the timeline on which I had to produce a CIP and the timeline necessary
CIP being
the capital improvement program,
okay,
and the timeline to study the airport just didn't coincide. I really needed the extra time.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you're, in the abstract, a fan of streetcars. You are responsible for being a big proponent of the streetcar as yet to be built in Arlington, Virginia, which is where you came from. Why are you a fan?
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about that yesterday as I was talking to some other people about the streetcar, and I actually came late to supporting streetcars. I was probably one of the stronger skeptics myself when I first became a manager in Arlington back around the turn of the century. And it wasn't a.
Well, that sounds old, doesn't it?
I know it does, doesn't it? And some days it feels it, too. But it wasn't until I actually went to Portland and actually saw their streetcar in operation, literally running on the street, that I developed a real appreciation. Portland was in a difficult situation. They're considered really progressive. They have a very strong smart growth plan to try to efficiently develop in the right places and to concentrate mixed-use development in their downtown. And what Portland was finding is that their zoning and land use was not being built to scale by the developers. They were not building as densely as the plan authorized. And so they were sub-optimizing, ultimately, their land use plan. And so they came up with the streetcar as a way to try to incentivize the private development community to build bigger and denser buildings with greater populations in their downtown consistent with their plan. And it happened.
So is the streetcar more valuable as a development and tax reduction or revenue increasing program, or is it more important as a transportation device?
Yeah, it really is both. I mean, one of the things that is important to understand is that it's an integrated system. You had smart growth people on your show yesterday, and I heard them extensively last night. And it's not a pick one or pick two. It's really developing your land use, your transportation, and your economic development plans in a way that are integrated. where there's synergies in the way that you grow and develop as a community. Mm-hmm. In this next phase, phase two of the CityLink's Gold Line, is going to be a really huge benefit around transportation. It is connecting so many activity centers, especially all of our institutions of academic learning that are on that line, in ways that it will really will connect what is going on in the inner area. And then the post phase two opens up the city to some fairly significant economic development and neighborhood redevelopment.
Doesn't the Gold Rush do that, and don't the CATS buses do that?
No, buses just will never do what rail in the streets do. You know, buses.
The Gold Rush is free. That the Gold Rush are those little rubber tired trolleys.
That's right, and you know it can help with transportation, but in terms of really incentivizing development, as you know, part of the Gold Rush is at risk now because of funding, and buses go wherever the bus driver takes them. Rail only takes you where the rail goes, and people are more willing to get on rail because they know where the stops are, they know the beginning and the end, and for developers, they know that it's going to be there and that it will carry the numbers of people, be they residents or workers, that they're building to sell to.
You used the term the next phase.
Yes.
So what's the first phase? The fact that we have two blocks of track down there on Elizabeth in front of CPCC? Is that the first phase?
Yes, that's phase one. So that's under construction now. That's about a $39 million project, if I'm remembering off the top of my head.
What they're building now.
What they're building right now.
Not what's already been laid. We have two
blocks
of track.
Well, some of it's already been laid. That's part of phase one.
Okay.
And so that was done, as I understand it, when the street was built. Now we're putting in the additional rail from the transit center in Uptown. And so that will be the very first mile and a half of the Gold Line. The phase two, which is the funding that I recommended this week, gets us another 2.5 miles.
Okay.
And so that gives us a 4 miles line from French Street to Sunnyside.
Would this all go online? Would the streetcar stop start operating all at the same time? Would it take that 2.5 miles and start operating, or would it start first just downtown between point A and point B, and then later on expand?
Yeah, phase one will start independently, and it will actually have the replica streetcars because of some decisions that were made in the past to try to reduce cost and to be able to bring the system online faster. And so we're a year or so away from actually having that operational. Phase two, which will not become operational until 2019 or 2020, will upgrade to the modern streetcar that will look very much like what's running on the Blue Line right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's low floor, modern.
But we're proceeding with constructing track right now. If you drive down Elizabeth Avenue or Trade Street toward McDowell, you'll notice that a lot of streets are – there's a lot of construction going on, and it's that being built. But we really haven't – have we decided on the financing for this? Are we putting the cart before the horse here? Could we be building track that will ultimately be used by no one?
Well, phase one is funded.
Okay.
Phase one is funded. There's a federal grant, and there was local capital improvement program money put into phase one, so it will open. The question is, are we going to stop at 1 mile, which really doesn't give us the full return on that initial investment,
mm-hmm.
or do we fully implement the plan that goes back to official adoption 2006 and advance the full Gold Line that gets us our east and west corridors?
So one of the things that you were trying to do in the time it took to for you to get settled in here was to figure out where this money is going to come from to build this thing out. And you have said that you want the city to apply for $63 million in federal money, and you're fairly positive, and that's half of what it would cost for the 2.5 mile lines. It costs $126 million or something like that. What does it cost in – yeah.
$126 million.
You're fairly confident that we can get this federal money. Why are you so confident?
Well, I would say I'm optimistic.
Okay.
It's going to be highly competitive, and so our project's going to have to compete with others around the country, and it will take a while to go through that process.
Mm-hmm.
But the second piece of it is what drove the federal fund recommendation. The council made clear last year, or at least a majority of the council, that using property taxes to fund phase two was a non-starter.
Right.
People felt like they made a commitment around the special sales tax for transit and would not use property tax. And so the inability to use property tax, I think, makes it really impossible at this point to locally fund the $126 million.
All right, but you have found the other half of this money, the other $63 million, by cobbling together various pots of unspent money that were allocated for other projects. I'm not sure why that is, and maybe you want to get into that, why we have allocated money for things that haven't been spent and why we wouldn't just give the money back to taxpayers. But if we don't want to raise property taxes, the Observer today in their editorial said, well, there's a question, although they're in favor of the thing primarily. There is a question on the table. If we're going to raise property taxes by 7.26% to 5% to pay for $816 million in capital improvement projects, which we've already decided to do, why not take this $63 million and apply it toward the $816 million and not raise property taxes as much?
Right. Well, the $816 million is not approved yet. That's before council and as part of their budget consideration for fiscal year 14. And yes, the $63 million that's identified, there are opportunity costs to spending it. And so if we spend a dollar one place, we can't spend it another place. Mm-hmm. The question is, are we serious about our 2030 transportation plan or transit plan or not? And if we're serious about implementing the transit plan that's already been approved, then we've got to work hard to implement those phases as we have windows of opportunity to do so. The federal funds that I'm recommending that we go after are not likely to be there in the future, just given the dynamics of federal funding and the federal deficit. And so I say we have a window of opportunity now, and let's go after it. Mm-hmm. If we're not going to support our transit plan when we have the opportunity to get 50% federal funding, it begs the question, are we going to support our transit plan or not? And if we're not going to support our transit plan, I think the kind of redevelopment that people have envisioned in the East and West corridors will not occur.
Okay. And if we don't get the federal money, what do we do?
We have to go back to the drawing board. And it becomes part of that larger issue that the transit funding working group has been deliberating. You know, what next? You know, can we get some support in the General Assembly for some additional funding or local taxing authority? Can we find some public-private partnerships that can advance them? We're certainly looking at public-private partnerships on the Red Line, and if we were able to pull that off.
The Red Line is to Huntersville.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, that's the Red Line, the Silver Line, and the East-West corridors are all integrated parts of a transit plan. And it begs the question, are we committed to the plan we've adopted or not? And I think what we've put together on this segment of the Gold Line gives us the lowest cost and the best path for advancing that part of the plan.
Mark Washburn, who's a columnist in The Observer, a very smart guy, very funny guy. He's got an interesting sense of humor, but he's also a skeptic about this. He took this whole thing to task this morning in the paper, being skeptical about the great development that's going to happen around this little streetcar.
I liked his recommended name Transformer more than his recommended name of Figment. But I get his
point. What do you see that he doesn't see?
I've seen Portland. I've seen what happened when we developed the streetcar plan for Columbia Pike. And it's very clear that every significant city that we're competing against is actively pursuing transit. You know, your speakers yesterday were talking about the millennials and how this next generation, which is a huge number of people, they're smarter than the boomers. They don't want to own cars. Cars are a huge waste of money.
Well, there's
and we want to compete for that population, and we'll only be able to do so if we have the activity centers and the transit options that bring the creative class to Charlotte and keep them here.
The article that they referenced on this program yesterday that appeared in the New York Times is in the Charlotte Observer today, and it is about people in Charlotte who are choosing to ride transit over using their cars. For the very reasons that you have cited here.
Yeah, it's very clear. You know, I teach in graduate program at George Washington University before I came down here. Mm-hmm. You know, my students don't own cars and don't want to own cars. We hired a lot of 20-somethings at ICMA. They didn't own cars, and they didn't want to own cars. And they lived in Washington, and as they looked for other cities they wanted to live in, they looked at places that provided them transit options. We've got great institutions of higher learning in this city, multiple ones, and we want to keep those students in Charlotte, but we have to give them the amenities that this next generation of leaders and entrepreneurs and business people really want to have.
You may not be able to answer this question because I know you don't run CATS. CATS is the Charlotte Area Transit System, which includes the links and the buses. But we received an email about light rail in advance of this show yesterday from Brian. He says, I'm an avid fan of light rail, but it bothers me when I see people using the system who do not pay for their tickets. If we use turnstiles, similar to the D.C. Metro system, wouldn't that increase the revenue of the system since you'd be required to pay the train fare before boarding the train? Also, why not charge small fees for parking? Just 25 cents a day would boost revenue without hurting our pockets. Do you have anything to say about that?
I think all of those areas are going to be part of an evolving discussion as Charlotte begins to transform itself to a more transit-oriented community.
How would you pay for the streetcar? Like you would pay for a bus when you get on, you just hand the fare to the operator? How would you
pay? There are probably five different ways to do fares. And so you have to evaluate each of them in light of the design of your system and in light of the economics of the system that you're operating.
I don't have much time left, but last time you were here, you mentioned streetcars as an investment.
Absolutely.
We have, I don't know, 30 seconds. Explain that again to people.
Yeah, it's generational. As I was saying, in our economic consultant, the full benefits of Phase 2 won't be realized until 2030 and 2035. And one of the things that's important for us as leaders today is to think beyond election cycles and really think in terms of generational development.
Did it take that long to build the metro, which was underground in a major city?
It took that long to realize the economic benefits. I presided over Arlington during a period of huge economic growth, and it was possible because of decisions made in the late 1960s.
Wow. Ron Carley, Charlotte City Manager. Thank you for the hour. Appreciate it.
Thank you.